to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, yesterday I spent some time viewing the web conference, the digital conference put on by the good folks over at the Alliance for American Manufacturing. It was titled Crisis Brings Consensus. And there was one of these weird moments where they bring in Marco Rubio, who I agree with virtually nothing on. And he had this moment, and I'm sure it had to hurt. It was this moment where he said that, you know, capitalism wasn't the end-all, be-all, do-all that we've been led to believe, that, you know, sometimes, I know it's going to be hard to hear, sometimes you need government. And he also said that, look, you know, what I've been saying on this program for the last 15 years, we really can't be this dependent on China. And that's the reality of where we are. And, you know, one of the speakers they had there that really caught my attention. And look, as I said, you know, we really need to take this issue on. Her name is Emily de Labruyere. She's the co-founder of the Horizon Advisory. She was one of the fantastic speakers there. So I asked her on the program. Emily, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thank you for having me on.
So, you know, I look at this and the fact that Marco Rubio came out and said, one, that capitalism isn't the end all, be all, do all, but that he came out and said, look, you know, China's a problem. We cannot be this dependent on China.
Yeah. I mean, this is something, this at this point is not political. This is a matter of having eyes open or eyes closed. China has spent the past 40 years explicitly trying to make sure that the US and the global system depends on China. Without, of course, China depending on anybody else. This is codified in China's industrial policy. They're explicit about this. They want to take a place for themselves in the international division of labor without letting their own labor be divided. It's a total subversion of free market economic theory.
But here's the thing, what we're told though, Emily, is that, you know, they're a capitalist society. An American business, you know, they chose where the dollars went. You know, I hear a lot of people tell me, you know, Rick, we've lost all these jobs. In fact, the number 5.1 million manufacturing jobs lost since 2001. And I say, we didn't lose them. We gave them away. We know exactly where they are. They're just not here.
Yeah, Rick, you've been saying this for years. China offers big U.S. companies or small U.S. companies its market share, or it offers them a small boost to their quarterly returns. And that does it. Ours is a fragmented system that's bound to immediate profit and that is desperate for the US market. And so we buy that promise and we keep buying it even after, oh wait, surprise, China's market stays closed to us. China just uses the innovation, the expertise, the resources that it acquires from US players to bolster its own state champions so that they can then go out, that's China, the name of China's industrial strategy, go out to conquer strategic industries and hollow them out all over the world.
What do you say to the person, though, Emily, who goes, you know, they're just doing what the U.S. did in the 1950s. They're just, you know, replaying the U.S. playbook. What do you say to that?
So that's absolutely the line. Here's the difference. China is trying to set global rules, and it's trying to build a CCP-controlled information infrastructure for the world. So the U.S. may have been, may still be Walmart, China's Amazon. Do you want a big brother, big tech in charge of the world? Because also, this is an authoritarian player. And it's doing this from the point of design. The ambition here, it's not accidental. It's to make our system dependent on it so China can achieve coercive control in the military, in the economic, in the information domains.
You know, it's you know, basically a mercantilist system. They're like predators. They find an industry that they want to take over. And it was auto parts a couple of decades ago. And we've moved, you know, industry after industry that they've gotten their hands into. Right now, it's rail cars and it's, you know, subway cars that they're dominating the globe with by undercutting everyone else. They've got a strategy. And unlike the U.S., they've got a very focused strategy. And I know Donald Trump loves to think that he can be the one who's going to take them on and he's going to go it alone. There's no way possible that we can have a go-it-alone strategy when dealing with China. This has to be something that's global.
Oh, absolutely. When China, their great fear, because as you just said, they're parasitic. Their great fear is what they call a high-tech blockade, that we will cut off their access to the innovation, the intellectual property that it steals from us. But when China talks about this, it says, oh yes, sure, there's a risk that China, that the US cut off their technology. That's cool, we'll just go to Europe. And that's what they're already doing. They're building those footholds. When trade war comes to a head, China says, great, let's just make sure we have the beachheads we need in Germany.
Right.
And this is a contest that's determined by scope and by scale. The U.S. alone can't rival China's scope and scale. The U.S. and its allies and its partners, those have a fighting chance.
And they have
a fighting chance if private sector is on board, too, which is a whole other question.
You know, it's one of these things where, you know, we've lost 4 years of Trump bloviating and pounding his chest. While they've been playing along, they've still been moving forward with all this. Their 2025 plan, where they've got, you know, robotics and aviation and transportation and telecom as their main focus of where they're putting their investment and where they're looking to dominate the world, as you've said. And once they dominate the new 5G world, it's over for the rest of us, because there'll be no such thing as privacy left, let alone from our government, but for theirs.
Yeah. And also, it's one thing when the aviation and the pharmaceuticals and the advanced manufacturing are all separate buckets. But what the 5G world threatens to do is put all of those on the same interconnected infrastructure. And if China has the rules and the systems for that interconnected infrastructure, it has an inherent advantage in every industry built on top of it. But also, it's not just that this has been going on for 4 years since China launched Made in China 2025. Those industrial priorities and the ambition behind them date back to the 1970s and 80s. At least for the past 4 years, we've been talking about it. Until then, we just had our eyes closed, heads in the sand, and our palms out to China.
Did we really have our eyes closed, though? Because, you know, I'm not that bright. To be honest with you, you know, I'm a truck driver by trade. I've been doing this as my passion for the last 15 years. I read as much as I can, but I'm not the brightest bulb in the box. But even I saw this coming. I saw that if you're a U.S. company and you're going to go over and you're going to go to China, take our tax breaks to move, and you're going to give half of your company to a Chinese entity and hand over your intellectual property and they steal it from you. Didn't you ask for it? Didn't you in some way go, yeah, here you go, you can have it?
Well, let's talk about two key differences between you and everybody who was out there talking about China for the past 40 years. First of all, you're in touch with reality. And none of the academics who are sitting there studying China, making our China policy, were in touch with the reality. They're busy listening to Chinese propaganda. Second of all, you're not making money off of the sweet short-term deal that Beijing's offering you in order to move all of your production industry to China. So I think you're then a whole lot smarter than everybody else who's setting our China policy.
Well, evidently, because we've lost 5.1 million manufacturing jobs since 2001. And look, I've seen the faces of those people who lose those jobs. I've seen the broken communities left behind because 70,000 factories have closed since then. Our policymakers have left us behind. And this is one of my great fears of this next election, because, you know, while I'm not a fan of Donald Trump by any stretch of the imagination, and I think he's boogering China up even more, at least he's talking about it. At least he's identified it as a problem. And this is where I'm trying to get Democrats on board with the idea that this is a serious issue, something that needs to be taken seriously. And we need to have a real policy on other than China's not a problem.
This is the first time, as you said, we've talked about China as the threat it is, and it's just insane that this is still a matter of contention. All the facts are clear. We have an adversary that treats this as a wartime environment and that wants to entirely subvert our country and the world order that projects our norms and our values, and there is no rallying around that. Like, there goes the future.
No, it's absolutely true. But you know, how do you stop it? You know, I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, it's probably been about 8 or 9 years now since I talked to this guy. But there's a little small manufacturer here in Pennsylvania that made something called the Navy chair. Before World War II started, before the U.S. got involved, the Department of Defense said, hey, we need a really light chair for our submarines. And his grandfather, you know, tells the story of throwing a chair out the window and bringing back this great chair. And it created jobs for decades. The Chinese got one, retro-engineered it, and make a cheap knockoff for like $39.95. This guy has no recourse whatsoever, because I can still buy it on Amazon for $39, where his is $100. He just got his entire family's legacy stolen out from under him, and yet our government does nothing about it. And yet we hear all we care about is intellectual property. How do we hold these people accountable? I guess the question, is there any hope in this?
Yeah, and that's definitely the big question. And let's just bring in quickly the insanity of the present moment with this pandemic thing. This is really bad, and China sees this as a huge opportunity. And they explicitly in their government planning talk about using COVID-19 as a chance to accelerate their global strategy. So we're all sitting around inside on Zoom, what have you, and they are moving in to seize market share and proliferate their information systems and capture depreciated strategic assets. But there is hope in all of this, which is that maybe this crisis is what wakes us up to what they've been doing and gives us a chance not just to respond in language or in a whack-a-mole reactive way, but actually to craft a deliberate strategy where we play defense, we don't make unforced errors, we don't let them steal our innovation and our market share. We also play offense and compete for the networks, the standards, the platforms they're trying to build. And of course, we change the narrative. We start actually talking about the fact that China has spent 40 years stealing our jobs and stealing our freedom, and we don't let them get away with that.
You know, one of the things that I talk about quite often on the program is this idea that we need to be much more conscious consumers. You know, and I don't know if this is going to help or not. Maybe you'll agree or you'll disagree. But as consumers, we've got to be looking where this stuff is made. It's no longer about, hey, we can get a whole bunch of cheap plastic crap at Walmart and fill up our baskets for $50 and be really happy about it until it all breaks and we have to throw it away. We've got to be much more savvy consumers and look for American-made products. I'll give you an example. You know, I'm looking to buy a car for my daughter. I actually had to explain to the salesperson why I wanted the VIN number before I would talk to them about the car because I wanted an American-made car. And this salesperson didn't know that the first number of the VIN number is the country of origin. And here in the U.S., if it has a 1, 4, or a 5, it's an American-made car. That means I can buy one of them. As consumers, we've got to know this stuff, and I think we got to be much more savvy. But will that do it, or are we too far down the road for that?
It can't just be a matter of all of us waking up and acting the right way. Because the short-term incentive is not to do that. And because it's just too difficult. Like, you try to go and buy a fridge that's not made by a Chinese entity. And that means that there has to be a movement from Washington that shapes our short-term incentives so that they align with our longer-term interests. Nothing happens until that does.
Right.
And that also doesn't happen until the government and the private sector get on board and actually cooperate on this subject.
But isn't this where...
Is there still hope? Yes. Is there much time? No.
Right. But isn't this where, you know, and one of, again, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump's by any stretch of the imagination, but the tariffs, I've been calling for tariffs for over a decade. I don't know if they worked or not, based on the way they played, like you said, whack-a-mole with all this. But there's a part of me that goes, there's got to be some tool that pulls them not in the line, but helps us defend ourselves. Because I don't think we're ever, I guess my question is, can we give up on the incentive or the thought or the hope or the dream that somehow China is going to be like us and that they're going to open up their society and they're going to let us in? Can we give up on that at this point?
Yeah, let's give up on that. Because the more we say that's going to happen, the more we cooperate and then they leverage that to be even more coercive. So yeah, I think it's time we give up on that.
Yeah. So for me, I wanted the tariff talk because, you know, I've been, you know, since, you know, Trump came out with the tariffs, I've been getting hammered by my Democratic friends going, oh, that's stupid. It's a dumb idea. It's just going to raise prices on consumers. And I go, no, you've got to figure out a way to protect domestic consumption and domestic production. I'm a huge fan of you can produce what you need and you trade for what you can't. We can make T-shirts and lawnmowers and washing machines here. We don't have to buy them all from China.
Yeah, and China noticed the tariffs. That's one of the big things. And that scared them because it meant that we are finally taking the competition seriously.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. So last line of questioning I've got for you, because, you know, I think people need to walk away with an idea that at least some hope. And I don't want to get, I think at the beginning you framed it perfectly. This isn't a right-left Democrat, Republican. This isn't a political issue whatsoever. This is about our survival. What message do we want people to walk away from this, you know, thinking about banging between their ears after we're done?
I think we want to remember that we'll go with the hope here. The U.S. is still the world leader, and the U.S. still has enduring advantages. We have the greatest innovative capacity in the world. We undergird the entire global system. You're near the Army War College. We have the strongest military in the world. We lose this contest if we let China subvert those advantages. So the first thing we do, and this is a fun task, is we take those advantages and we rethink how we apply them so that they are actually suited to competing in a modern environment. And so their strengths rather than vulnerabilities.
So this isn't solely about punishing China. It's about pulling them into line. Because, look, there's a lot to talk about with punishing China, with currency manipulation and all of the state-owned enterprises that they've got. There's a lot to talk about there.
Oh, yeah. And this is like, really, this can be a positive narrative, all of this. This is the chance for the U.S. to remember what its norms, what its values, what its strengths are, and to rebuild around a threat.
And we always do better at times of war, so we should call this, we're at war. Maybe that's the only way we'll get our heads out of our behinds. But here's the thing, as you said, we've got the strongest, most powerful military machine in the entire entity, in the entire time of civilization. The only problem is if we can't get the screws to keep it together because we make them in China, we probably have a problem.
Exactly.
Just a thought. But Emily, I appreciate the thoughts and the time. Great stuff. I hope you'll come back and share some more with us.
Anytime. Thank you for having me on.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Again, I've been saying this for a while. We've got to do something about China, and maybe this is part of it. Maybe she's got some stuff there. I'd love to hear your thoughts, though. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.